Shabbos Daf Kuf Vav, we are on the bottom of Kuf Hem and Beis. The Mishnah yesterday taught us that if one were to tear on Shabbos because he is angry or because he has a mace and he has to do Kriya over the mace, Mishnah says such an individual would be Pater, and the Mishnah goes on to say that V'chol HaMakaklim Pater, that anyone who does a destructive act on Shabbos is going to be Pater, because a destructive act by its very nature is not going to be a Malacha. Malacha by definition has to be a constructive act. That was the mission of the Bryce yesterday said, HaKorei B'chamaso V'Avelo, someone who tears out of anger, or because he's an Avelos, and he tears over a mace, he's going to be Chayav. And even though he was Mechal Shabbos, but Yasi Yedei Kriya, he fulfills his obligation of doing Kriya. Obviously what we had yesterday is the story between the Mishnah and the Braisa on two counts. One is that the Mishnah taught us that if a Kareva Chamasa, one tears out of anger, that's destructive, and therefore it is going to be Pater. The Braisa says tearing out of anger is going to be Chayev. A second story between the Mishnah and the Braisa is going to be Al Meso, that if one tears Kriya because of a Meso, so the Mishnah says you're going to be Pater because it's destructive, and the Braisa says you're going to be Chayev. So the way we dealt with it yesterday, the Gemara addressed the question. The Gemara answered both questions. Question number one, regarding Chamaso, the difference between controlled anger and uncontrolled anger. Uncontrolled anger is something which the Gemara said in yesterday's daf is tantamount to Avodah Zarah, that is destructive in nature, and that's what the Mishnah is describing as being a destructive act, and therefore you're going to be Pater. On the other hand, if it's the type of tearing where it's constructive in nature, kind of like a controlled anger, but not even so much a controlled anger. I'm sure that's how I described it in yesterday's daf. But the controlled anger over here simply meaning that you're not really angry, you're just demonstrating anger. So under those circumstances, so then the tearing that you're doing is going to be constructive in nature, and therefore you're going to be chayev. That is how to resolve the differences between the first question. The second question, in terms of mace, so if there's an obligation that one has to do kriya, i.e., It is a one of the Zayin Krovim, or it's a Talmud Chacham, or it's an Adam Kasher, or you were there for Yitzias Neshama. So under those circumstances, so there's an obligation there, therefore, to do Kriya, and therefore it's constructive in nature. And that's the Braisa, and the mission that says that Shapater is talking about where you did Kriya over a mace, but it's none of the above that we just got done describing. With all that stated, we mentioned the significance, the importance of giving proper hesped to somebody who died. The Gemara now is going to spend just a little bit of time going over that point and making a couple of additional points regarding giving proper eulogies to people. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, continuing now in the Gemara. On Kuf Hei Amud Beis, we are towards the bottom of the Amud, about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapara. So the Gemara quotes now the Memra. Kol Amori Demas al Adam Kosher. Anyone who cries over a person who was a kosher person, Hakadosh Baruch Hu Sofra. Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to count the tears. Umenicham bebeis genazav, and he's going to put it in a special storehouse. Shenamar the pasuk in Tehillim supports this idea. Nodi safarta atas siman dimasi beno adcha halo besifrasecham. The Pasuk in Tehillim speaks to this idea that the Dema'os, the tears, are going to go into a special container, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be counting those tears, and so therefore it is a very positive act to cry over the death of somebody who was an Adam Kasher. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Kol Mis'achal Be'etz Peido Shal Chacham. Anyone who's lazy and does not properly eulogize the Talmud Chacham, Ra'ei L'Kovro B'Chayav, that person should be buried alive, Shenamar. And the Gemara now is going to be citing at the end of Sefer Yoshua. Vayigburu oso b'gvul nachlaso b'tin maserach. And he, meaning Yoshua, was buried in the border of Timna Serach, Asher Behar Ephraim, which was located in Har Ephraim, Mitzafon Lahar Ga'ash. And it was just to the north of Har Ga'ash. And the Gemara is assuming right now that the word Har Ga'ash is not so much a geographic location, but a drasha to be darshan. Melamit Sheraga Shalem Har Lahar Gan. That really the mountain shook because the mountain wanted to kill the people who were there bearing Yoshua. And the understanding is that they didn't give Yoshua a proper hesped, a proper eulogy. Now it's so interesting, the Gemara does not delve into this. Why exactly did Yoshua not receive a proper eulogy? So this is not discussed in the Gemara. But nevertheless, the assumption is that they did not. And that's why the mountain wanted to bury them alive. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Mis'atzal Be'hespedo Shel Chacham. Anyone who's lazy over the eulogy of a Talmud Chacham, Eino Marich Yamin. That person is not going to enjoy long life. Mida Keneged Mida, and this is measure for measure. Shenemar B'sa'asa B'sha'achal Tirivenu. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu describes how B'sa'asa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, measures you measure for measure. B'shalchat rivenam. That which you sent out is that which you're going to get back, mida keneged mida. And because you did not treat the person with the proper respect in terms of a hesped, and you weren't respectful about his death, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be respectful about your death, and you will die prematurely. Eisvei, the Gemara challenges, Eisvei, Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Rav Yochanan, the following challenge was posed to Rav Yochanan. The pasuk in Yeshayahu writes, Vayavdu ha'am es Hashem kol yimei Yoshua. The people served the Kadosh Baruch Hu during the days of Yoshua. V'chol yimei ha'zakenim, asher ha'richu yamim acharei Yoshua. And the Navi in Yeshayahu describes that the Zakenim also, who enjoyed arichus yamim. Now, we just got done learning together that for the burial of Yoshua, there wasn't a proper hesped. And we just learned together that Mida Keneged Mida informs us that the people who did not maspid him properly deserve to die early. And meanwhile, the pasuk in Yeshayahu that we just went over teaches us that they enjoyed a long life. So Amalei Bavlai. So when he challenged, so they said to him, you're obviously from Bavel. And we know that there was a general animus that existed between Chachmei Bavel and Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. We see it time and again throughout the Gemara. So he says, Bavlai, Yamim ha'irichu shanim lo irichu. So yes, it's true that they had Yamim, he had extended days, but not extended years. So there was certainly a quality of life that perhaps he enjoyed, but in terms of a length of years, so that he did not enjoy. The Gemara says, really? So when you see the word Yamim, so you can limit it to just simply having some days remaining, but not years. Meanwhile, we all know, the Pasuk says that if you teach Torah, learn Torah and teach Torah, so we say it every day in Shema, Laman, your days will be lengthened. And now what are we going to do? We're going to limit the bracha, yamim velo shanim. It's only days, but not years. So the Gemara says, no, bracha shani. No, that's a bracha. So when we're learning a bracha in the Torah, so there we have the ability to be expansive and assume that the bracha is not just limited to days, but the bracha also includes years as well. But when we are describing not something in the context of a bracha, so then yamim can be limited. Am Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Echa min ha'achim shemeis, if one of the brothers die, yid'agu kol ha'achim kulo, all the other brothers should be worried. Meaning that there is a din on that particular family, and the death of one of the brothers is going to signal that there's din on the entire family, and therefore it's cause for to concern, and the concern should translate in, the Gemara doesn't make this point, but it seems to be pretty obvious, and the concern should translate into pishpash masav. They should examine their deeds, and it should be an alarm to do tshuva. Echem ibnei chabur shemesa tidag kol hachabura kula. And the same thing is true when you have a group of people that are organized in some sort of social construct, and one of them die. So again, everybody should worry. Now amilad demes gadol, amilad demes katan. Now in terms of what, the death of whom that signals off that there is a din against that family or against that group. So some say it's the death of the greatest of them, some say it's the smallest of them, and the Gemara does not really give any kind of sourcing in terms of why it should be and what exactly it is it's signaling that there's a din against that family. We are now going to go back to the Mishnah, and we're going to be discussing Mekalkel b'Melacha, doing destructive acts. Let's go back to our Mishnah. Let's review the Mishnah before we start with the Gemara. Our Mishnah said that if somebody were to tear in anger, or if somebody were to tear over the death of a relative, so that is a destructive act, you're going to be pater. And then the Mishnah made a very general statement, a global statement, and that is kol ha'mekalkelin paturim, that anyone who does a destructive act in any of the malachas is going to be pater. The Mishnah over here is not limited to any particular malacha, and what we get from the Mishnah is that when you do a malacha that is destructive, and even if the malacha in general is destructive in nature, nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling us that you're going to be pater because a malacha, by definition, has to be a constructive act, not a destructive act. That's the simplest way to read the Mishnah, and that is the way we read it yesterday. With that stated, now we go to our Gemara. We're on the top of Kuv Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara starts off the discussion with the following. Chol ha'mekalkelin paturim, tani Rabbi Abba coming to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Abba brought a brisa in front of Rabbi Yochanan, and the brisa read, Chol ha'mekalkelin paturim, chutz michov ha'lamavir. That when it comes to destructive acts, you're going to be pater in general with two exceptions, the malacha of chovel and the malacha of mavir. The malacha of chovel and mavir are destructive acts in their very definition, and so therefore when you want were to violate these malachas on Shabbos, even though they're destructive in nature, you're going to be chayev. So these are the exceptions. Let's go over both these malachas individually. Chovel is making a wound in somebody, either a person or an animal. That is chavala. That is a malacha. Now, if you go back and you review the 39 malachas, which one of the 39 malachas is chavala? So the answer is, it's none of the 39. meaning as the list is presented to us, Chavala is not one of the 39. So that must mean, therefore, the Chavala is not an Av Malacha, Chavala is a Tolda. So it's a subcategory. Okay, begs the next question. It's a subcategory of which one of the Malachos? The Gemara never says. The Gemara assumes that Chavala is an Issa Daraisa. It is Chilul Shabbos. It is a Tolada. But the Gemara never tells us that Chavala is a Tolada of which one of the Avos Malachos. The Rishonim debate this very issue. Rishonim have numerous opinions. Just to quickly, not to belabor this point, although it is an important point, but to quickly go over the various opinions amongst the Rishonim. So some say that Chavala is a Tolada of Shechita, just like Shechting, what you're doing is you're drawing blood. Chavala, you're drawing blood as well. Obviously, Shechita results in death. Chavala, not, it's not death. That's one possibility. Another one is Soveya. What you're doing is you're coloring the area when you're making a wound in an area, so you are reddening that area, and therefore it's Soveya. That's another possibility. And the third possibility is Dash, is what you're doing is you're taking something from the inside and you're extracting it outside. Anyway, these are the three different possibilities. Chavala, let's say it for our purposes right now, really succinctly, Chavala is a Chilul Shabbos, it's a Malacha, and therefore one would be Chayav. Now, Chavala by its very nature is destructive, and yet the Braisa says that even though it's destructive in nature, you're going to be Chayav. A second exception is going to be Mavir. Mavir, of course, is burning, igniting a fire. Whenever you ignite a fire, so that which catches a fire is now going to be incinerated, and so Mavir, by very definition, is going to be destructive in nature. And the point of this brisa, as presented by Rabbi Abahu, is that these two are going to be the exception to the rule, and that one were to do either Chavala or Havara, one would be in violation of Shabbos, even though it's a destructive act. Here becomes the problem. When we learned our Mishnah says, Kol HaMakaklim Peturim, and our Mishnah made no distinction whatsoever between any kind of malacha. And the simplest reading of our Mishnah would indicate that it would include even Chovel and even Mavir as well. And this obviously presents a significant problem. How can you learn the Mishnah and then learn the Braisa that was just presented by Rabbi Abahu? We're going to address that question head on in just a moment, but in the meantime, we're first going to look at Rav Yochanan's reaction when Rav Yochanan hears the Braisa. Amalei Poktani Levra. So Rav Yochanan says, take the Braisa outside. The Braisa does not belong in the base medrash. Rav Yochanan says, there really is no defensible explanation of the Braisa. Best thing to do with the Braisa is remove it from the base medrash. It is just simply not part of the corpus of Torah. That is his first reaction to the hearing of this Braisa. Obviously, an extraordinarily strong reaction. Chovel Amavir in a Mishnah. And just to make sure that we understand exactly what his point was, he says it very clearly. Chovel and Mavir is not to be part of the Braisa, meaning the Braisa should have just simply said, Kol HaMekalklin Peturim, period, just like our Mishnah taught us. The Intim Salomar Mishnah, now Rav Yochanan says, look, even if we're going to say that there is some validity to the Braisa that you just read to me, so I'll tell you, Chovel B'Sarach L'Kavah, we're doing the Chavala over here because I need the blood for a dog back in the day. So blood was viewed as a positive food for a dog to eat. If the dog is sick and somehow eating the blood of another creature, either, let's assume it's animal blood. I'm not sure about that. But let's assume it's animal blood. Somehow it's going to be beneficial to the dog. And so therefore, I'm doing the chavala in order to extract blood to give it to the dog. So that is a destructive act, but of course with a constructive purpose. That's the malach of chavala and mavir b'tzarach lefro. And the reason why we're burning something right now is because I need the ashes. I need the ashes for whatever reason, some sort of productive reason, positive reason. And so the Braisa is describing these two scenarios. And since the Braisa is describing these two scenarios, so this is by definition not a destructive act, it's a constructive act. And that's what the Braisa means. But if we're talking about burning or creating a wound for simply the destructive purposes of what you normally do, so then under those circumstances, you're going to be potter. So either way, Rav Yochanan is dismissing the basic point of the Braisa, which is that Chovel and Mavir are exceptions to this rule of Kol HaMekaklim Peturim. Now, Vahana and Tanan Kol HaMekaklim Peturim. Now, the Gemara asks a question. As Rashi points out over here, we're going to assume, not like Rav Yochanan, but we're going to assume like Rabbi Abau. Rabbi Abau quoted the Braisa. Rabbi Abraham's Braisa says that when it comes to Mekalkalin, you're going to be Pater, with exception to Chovel HaMavir. And despite the fact that Rav Yochanan held serious objection to the version of the Braisa, nevertheless, we are going to assume now from this point going forward that this Braisa is on solid ground. And therefore, what is going to trouble us is the following, is that assuming that the Braisa is correct, now what we have is a blatant steer between the Braisa and the Mishnah. The Mishnah makes no exception whatsoever. The Mishnah says that any time I violate a malacha, and I do so in a destructive manner, and that would include chovel, and that would include mavir, so then you would be pater. And the Braisa says that chavala and mavir are going to be exceptions to the rule, that even if I'm doing them for destructive purposes, I'm going to be chayev. So we have now a stira between the Mishnah and the Braisa. So the Gemara says, how are we going to address the stira? Masnis and Rabbi Huda, Braisa, Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says that the way to address the stira is just simply give different attribution. And that is, the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, and the Braisa is authored by Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara here is going to elaborate a little bit, but not really give us any kind of svara. The Braisa is just going to go over the back and forth of the sources of where we see this. So the first thing that we'll do is we'll just simply finish off the Gemara, citing the sources, but the Gemara does not really give us the svaras. We're going to go back and we're going to fill in the svaras afterwards. My time at the Rabbi Shimon. Now, what is the basis of Rabbi Shimon? Meaning, Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion, he is the Braisa, that if one did Chavala and one did Mavir, and even though they are destructive in nature, you're going to be Chayiv. How does he know that? Midid Tzurchar, the Mishrei Mila. Because we know that the mitzvah of Mila is Docha Shabbos. If the eighth day of the Mila comes out on Shabbos, so the mitzvah of Mila is going to override Shabbos. Mila, by very definition, involves the act of Chavala. You're going to be cutting off a piece of the flesh of the baby. And meanwhile, it is going to be able to override the Shabbos. By virtue of the fact that we're saying it's overriding the Shabbos, that means to say that the act is in fact a malacha. So ha-chova ba'amachayev, that means to say that in general, the Torah allows for the mitzvah of Mila because it's a mitzvah of Mila. If there wasn't a mitzvah of Mila, it would be absolutely prohibited. And that shows us that the destructive act of chavala is one is subject to going to be, let's say it again clearer, one is going to be subject to the chilul Shabbos of chavala. And umida asarachman havar gabe bas kohen shmamin amavir ba'amachayev. Additionally, if a bas kohen committed adultery, the Torah says that because she's a bas kohen, she is going to receive the capital punishment of sreifa, not the standard punishment of chenek for niyuf. With that stated, so obviously in order to perform sreifa, so that is going to be involving the act of havara. The Torah says that for the Bas Kohen, in order to punish her, one can punish her 6 days a week, anytime from Sunday through Friday, but one cannot execute her on Shabbos, even though the execution would be a mitzvah per se, but the Torah says do not do so on Shabbos. The Gemara has a drasha in terms of how we get to that. The Gemara in Sanhedrin goes over the drasha. But in the meantime, over here, what do we see? That even though we are burning a fire in order to heat up the lead, which is a destructive act in its nature, nevertheless, the Torah says that you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, and the Torah gives us a drasha that tells us that you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, that meaning to say that in general, it is going to be considered a malacha. So, we see we have sources for Rabbi Shimon that Chavala is a malacha, and Mavir is a malacha, even though destructive acts. That is all the sourcing for Rabbi Shimon. What about Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda asa metakin hu kid Rav Ashi. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's tikkun. No, that's constructive. Da'amar Rav Ashi, mali letakin mila, mali letakin kli. What are you talking about? When you're doing a mila, so that's a tikkun, it's a tikkun gavra. It's no different than, let's say, there is a kli and that requires some sort of finishing touch. And so what we do is that we clip a little bit here, we bend a little bit here in order to put the finishing touches on the clear. The same thing with a baby. A baby with an arla is an unfinished product, and by doing the mila, so that's tikkun. So, and as far as the burning of the lead, mali lavashal psila, mali lavashal simonim, and also in terms of the burning of the lead, the boiling of the lead, what you're doing is you're purifying the lead. Admittedly, of course, you're going to be using it for the execution, but in terms of what you're doing with the lead, you're purifying it. It'd be no different than the cooking of the simanim, and so therefore it is not a destructive act. We could view it as a constructive act. So, a debate between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, how to view Mila, whether it's viewed as solely destructive or whether we could view it as constructive. But anyway, these are the sourcings for Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Gemara, but we're still absent understanding. Because the Gemara says that in terms of whether or not Chovel or Mavir, as destructive acts, are going to be considered malacha, so it is a steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And the Gemara says, and that really is a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, where Rabbi Yehuda is going to be espousing the viewpoint of our Mishnah, and Rabbi Shimon is going to be espousing the viewpoint of our Braisa. Now, the Gemara does not explain Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in what context, meaning where do we find Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon having any debate regarding Kilkul, that the Gemara now can plug in over here that the Mishnah and the Braisa and the difference between them is just going to be reflective of the Shitas of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda as it relates to Kilkul, where meanwhile we do not have any Gemara in all of Shabbos that teaches us Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon regarding Kilkel. And Rashi addresses this very problem. Let's take a look at a very important Rashi in this whole discussion. Masnis and Rabbi Yehuda. Rashi writes, Islay Mekalka Bechabura Pater. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that Kilkel Bechabura is going to be Pater. Veloi's Parashecha. Now Rashi says, now I don't know where it's found. And so therefore, here's what we're going to do. And Rashi is going to do the following. He's going to take a machlokas that we do know that exists between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and he's going to plug it into our discussion. And let us follow over here. It took me a long time to really wrap my head around this Rashi and around this idea that we're about to learn together, but I think I have somewhat of an understanding. V'lini Yira, Rashi writes over here, Masisim Rabbi Yehuda hi, that our mission is following the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, Damar Melacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa Chayev, Alaha. Now we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a Melacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is going to be Chayev. Hilka Chiyuva D'Chovel B'Tzarech L'Kabo Mavir B'Tzarech L'Afra. And that's why the Chiyuv of Chovel can be incorporating where I need it, I need to do a wound in order to get blood, to extract blood for the dog, or I need to burn in order to get the ashes. Now, in order to understand this a little bit better, let's just take a step back here in Rashi. Let's move away from Rashi for just a moment, and let's organize our thoughts over here. We know that we have a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon by a melacha shein tzricha l'gufa. And what does that mean? So because we're learning Rashi, so let's say it like Rashi. Okay, we'll say the pshat in the machlokes the way Rashi presents it. Anyway, we're learning Rashi right now. And that is as follows. A malacha tzricha l'gufa means that I'm doing a malacha and I'm doing a malacha for a positive benefit. 39 malachas in the Torah, and each one of them has basically a positive benefit to gain from it. So let's say, for example, the malacha v'otzah. The malacha v'otzah tells me that the reason why I'm not allowed to carry something from inside the house to outside the house is because I want to take the item from inside the house to the outside of the house. So the goal of the Torah is, as far as a malacha is concerned, to move something from point A to point B. This is a malacha hatzricha legufa. Then what would be the example of malacha she'in hatzricha legufa? So Rashi says an example of that would be, well, let's say there's a mace in the house. And right now the discomfort of being in a house together with a mace, it's tremendous discomfort, both emotionally and maybe also just simply because of the smell, whatever the case is, it's uncomfortable. We're going to take the mace and we're going to move him out of the house. This is a classic example of a malacha she'in hatzricha legufa. Where there, I am doing the malacha v'otzah, but I'm doing it not because of the positive benefit where I want to go from point A to point B. I just don't want the mace right now here in the house. And this is the malacha she'in hatzricha l'gufa, as Rashi explained it. Again, Tosfos gives a different explanation. We saw this back on Daf Tzadi Daled, but right now let's work with Rashi. With that stated, so now, what do we know about the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? Let's review. Rabbi Yehuda says the malacha she'in hatzricha l'gufa is going to be chayev. And Rabbi Shimon says Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is going to be Pater. Now, admittedly, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not Mutar L'Gamrei. Actually, we're going to talk a little bit more about that in tomorrow's daf. But according to Rabbi Shimon, it is Pater, a Pater of Al-Asr. Fine. Now, what does that tell us regarding Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon? And here we get to the critical point, and hopefully you have been following up until this very point. And now we get to the critical point in terms of connecting Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa to our discussion of Kilkel. It means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, let's start with Rabbi Yehuda because that's what we're doing in the Rashi right now. It means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is a much wider description or definition of a malacha. Meaning a malacha according to Rabbi Yehuda could both be either legufa or afilu she'ina legufa. Either one of them would still qualify as a malacha min haTorah. That means according to Rabbi Yehuda, that let's say for example, let's present in front of us a malacha of chovel. Or the malacha of Maver, these generally destructive malachas. Well, since Rav Yehuda allows for a bigger definition of the malacha, meaning what is the malacha, generally speaking, legufa, the malacha legufa, what would it be? Generally speaking, its destructive act. The act of creating a wound. The act of burning something down. However, according to Rav Yehuda, what also is incorporated within the malacha? Eina gufa. A malacha she'ina tzricha legufa. That also falls under the category of the malacha. So when the malacha of Chovel or Mavir is presented in front of us, so for Rabbi Yehuda, who has a wider range of what it covers, both a malacha tzrich l'gufa and malacha she'en tzrich l'gufa, so here's what Rabbi Yehuda can do. He could basically now create a division in the malacha and say, well, the malacha, which is tzrich l'gufa, that's destructive. You're not going to be chai for that. And the malacha she'en tzrich l'gufa, now what are examples of malacha she'en tzrich l'gufa? We already gave a couple, but let's go over them again. I am wounding the animal, not to create a wound in the animal. I'm wounding the animal in order to extract blood. That's a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. Well, according to Rav Yehuda, that's still part of the malacha. That could be where the Torah is describing the malacha so that you would be chayev. Or, in the case of burning, I'm burning because I want the ashes. I don't want to burn because I want to incinerate. I'm burning because I want the ashes. Also, a malacha she'en tzricha legufa. So, according to Rav Yehuda, because he has a wider range of what the malacha covers, so then he can make a distinction between the portion of the malacha that is more kilkel, the portion of the malacha that's non-kilkel. Portion of the malacha that's kilkel, that's pater. Portion of the malacha that's non-kilkel, you're going to be chayev. That is all according to Rav Yehuda. With all that stated, let's see this inside in Rashi. Because Rashi makes exactly this point. I'm going to go back again. Hilkach. Just a couple lines above. Chiyuvah dechovah b'tzarach lekavel, mavir b'tzarach la'afra. When it comes to the chiyuv of chovel, it's talking about a case where I need the blood for my dog. Or mavir, where I need the ashes. Mishkach ladafa b'de mekalko hu eitz malacha atzma. Now in terms of the malacha itself, it's kilkol, but metakin hu eitz l'acherim. But there is a tikkun in the fact that we are extracting blood. Or there's a tikkun in the fact that we now have the ashes. Ule Rav Yehuda ki agavna malacha hu. And now according to Rav Yehuda, that also is a malacha. Mishum tikkun acherim. Ava makalkol v'eino mesakin pater. But the kilkel portion of it is going to be pater. Now the next part of Rashi is going to be a technical point regarding the fact that we've already established the first part of the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon, and now we're going to end up being in an awkward position where the first line is going like Rabbi Shimon, the second line is going like Rabbi Yehuda. Rashi says we have to acknowledge that. Rashi doesn't ask it as a question, he just simply acknowledges that so. That is all according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now what we're going to do is we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to do it for Rabbi Shimon. And we can take a look at the next Rashi, who writes to Rabbi Shimon. He, Rashi writes, Damar malacha shein tzricha legufa pater, aleha. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that malacha shein tzricha legufa is pater. Now again, if we take a step back, what does that mean? It means that according to Rabbi Shimon, each malacha now is going to be much more narrowly defined. Each malacha is only going to be a malacha hatzricha legufa. But according to Rabbi Shimon, the portion of a malacha that's in tzricha legufa is not part of the malacha. Hilkach, and here we get to a critical point, which is in lechachov lamavish emakalko. So that means to say that since the malacha, by its very definition, is only the one, the portion that's tzricha legufa, so then what is the malacha of chovel? Only the destructive act of creating a wound. What is the malacha of mavir? Only burning something down and incinerating it. V'afilu mavir eitzim l'kdira so mekakel hu eitzel eitzim v'mahu metakin eitzel acherim l'Rabbi Shimon lo chashiv. The fact that there may be some sort of side benefit, but according to Rabbi Shimon, you can't consider that. Why can't you consider that? Da'am malacha she'en esrich l'gufa, because that falls under the category of malacha she'en esrich l'gufa. Ela mishum de mekakel b'chaval avavar achayiv. So now, that according to Rabbi Shimon, the range of what a malacha is a much more narrow range. And since the malacha of chovel mavir, according to Rabbi Shimon, is only defined by the destructive act, therefore, we have to conclude, because we know that chovel, and we know that mavir malachas, we have to conclude, therefore, that according to Rabbi Shimon, in the malacha of chovel, in the malacha of mavir, despite the fact that they're destructive, they are nevertheless going to be a malacha, and one is going to be chayiv, because there's simply no other way to explain it. Since his definition is so narrow, and since it only results in a kilkel, so therefore there's no other way to explain it other than to say that these are in fact malachas, despite the fact that they are destructive. This is the way Rashi aligns the shitas of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda vis-a-vis the position of malacha shein tzricha legufa as it relates to kilkel. Now, if we're following really well, it comes out to be a little bit strange, meaning Rabbi Shimon, who is more mekel by malacha shein tzricha legufa, comes out now to be a chumra regarding kilkel, in that mekalkel by chovel and mekalkel by mavir is going to be chayev. And Rav Yehuda, who is more machmir by malacha shein tzricha legufa, is going to be mekel when it comes to kilkel of chovel and kilkel of mavir. That is the conclusion. But if you've been following the discussion up until now, you understand how we got to that conclusion, even though the conclusion itself sounds a little bit strange. But once you see the steps along, you understand how we get to the conclusion. Admittedly, that was a challenging discussion in the Gemara. We continue now in the Gemara. We are almost at the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. Shir Amalabim, when it comes to the amount of Liban, how much wool do you have to white in order to be Chayiv? So Rav Yosef Machve Kafel, Rav Chia Bar Ami Machve Pasha. Rav Yosef, when he would demonstrate to other people exactly what the length was, the linear length, so he would show his two fingers held up in a peace sign, the difference between the difference in length between these two fingers, double that amount, and that's how Rav Yosef would demonstrate to others what that would be. Rav Chiya Bar Ami, when he would show it, so he would hold up his middle finger and his thumb, he would stretch them out as far as possible. He would hold up his pointer and his thumb, stretch them out as far as possible, and the distance between them, between the two of them. Rashi over here writes, interestingly, that the double distance between your forefinger and your middle finger is going to be the same as the distance between your thumb and your forefinger being held up. And the difference between these Amoraim is that each one is just simply doing a different way to get to that same linear measurement. That's the way Rashi describes it. It's a little bit strange because according to Rashi, it comes out that there's no debate in the Gemara right now. It just happens to be that each one has a different way of arriving at that measurement. Let us continue. We are on the Mishnah on the bottom. And now we are changing gears. We're now moving to the Malacha of Seda. We're talking about trapping on Shabbos, one of the third nine Malachas on Shabbos. And we are going to get into the specifics of Seda. And this is where we're going to be finishing the 13th Perek of the Masechta. We're finishing it tomorrow, but in the meantime, however, we're going to start off our discussion regarding the malacha of trapping. Rav Yehuda Amar Atzad Tzipor LeMigdal. Rav Yehuda says that if you take a bird and you bring it into a Migdal is a very small, confined area where the bird is going to be trapped in that area. Vitzvi Labayz Chayev. And if I take a deer and I bring it into a house, you're going to be chayev. Meaning Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that when it comes to a bird, putting into a small confined area, into like a closet area, is going to be chayev, meaning that's the act of trapping. And as it relates to a deer, despite the fact that there's plenty of room in the house to move, nevertheless, Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that that is considered trapping as it relates to the deer, and you're going to be chayev for that as well. V'chachamim omrim tzipor l'migdal. Chachamim are of the opinion that a bird is trapped when it is put into the migdal, meaning that he agrees, the chachamim agree with Rav Yehuda regarding what is the definition of trapping as it relates to birds. Utzvi legina lechatzo libavarim. Libavarim. And as far as the deer is concerned, you don't have to bring it into your house, actually, as long as you bring it into your enclosure, any one of your enclosures. Egina is the garden, chatzir is the front enclosure. Bivarim is, generally speaking, the back enclosure, but basically any kind of enclosure. So if you do that, you're going to be chayv. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer lo kol ha-bevarim shavim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that not all these enclosures are going to be the same. Zaklal mechusar seder patr, shein mechusar seder chayev. A difference to be made where, if it's in this area, but there's still more trapping that needs to be done, meaning that once it's in this area, I still need effort in order to get it. So putting it there to begin with is not considered trapping because there's still more work for me to be done. On the other hand, if I put it in an area where it doesn't require any more work for me, and I could just simply get it right there, so then that is considered trapping, and that would be a malacha. Rav Shimon Gamliel here is explaining the Chachamim. Is he arguing with the Chachamim? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss that briefly. Tanan Hasam, we're going to learn a mission together in Beitza. Ein tzadim dagen min hebevarim biyamtov. The Mishnah says that one is not allowed to trap fish from the bevar on yamtov. The ein nosim lefnei mezonos, and also you're not allowed to feed them as well. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi says that the fish are put into some sort of net. And meanwhile, the fish are in an enclosure. And meanwhile, on yantav, what you can't do is you can't take the fish out of that enclosure because it's going to require effort on your part. And so therefore, that would be an act of trapping. Also, you can't feed them. It is an involved discussion in terms of why you can't feed them. But right now, we could say it succinctly like Rashi. The way Rashi says it over here is because the fish are muksa, meaning you're not allowed to trap the fish. So to you right now, the fish are muksa. And you're not allowed to put any kind of effort into muksa or on behalf of muksa. Rashi writes over here, Kevin Dein Muksa Lomati Lemitrach Alaihu. The fish are Muksa, and so therefore you cannot effort and endeavor on behalf of Muksa. The discussion over here gets a little bit more involved. There is a question of whether or not they're dependent on you or they're not dependent on you. That's Rashi over there in the Gemara and Beitza. But right now, here in Shabbos, Rashi says it simply. We're going to keep it simple right now in terms of why you cannot feed the fish. But one is allowed to trap chayva ofen and put in front of them food. Now, of course, what the Mishnah here in Beisa mean does not mean. Let's start off with what it does not mean. Is that you're allowed to trap chayva of anyantiv. You're not allowed to trap chayva of anyantiv. Even though you're allowed to do certain malachas for ochel nefesh, but trapping is not one of the malachas that you're allowed to do. You could have done it before yantiv. You do not have permission to do it on yantiv itself. Okay, when we get to Beis, we'll discuss this in much greater detail. In the meantime, however, it does not mean that you're allowed to trap chayva of. What it means is that once these animals are already in a trap space, so now you can take them on yantiv. Or Minu, and on the other hand, however, we have another Braisa. Bevarim shalchayz v'shalofus v'shaldagim ain't side of mehem b'yomtov ain't osnum with name azonos. In the Braisa, it says that when you have these enclosures that include animals, birds, and fish, so you cannot take them on yantav, meaning they are not considered trapped, and so therefore taking them would be an act of trapping, and that you are not allowed to do. So kasha chaya chaya kasha ofas ofas. So what we have over here is a stira between the Mishnah of Beitza and the Braisa that we just learned together. Now Bishlam Chaya Chaya Lo Kasha HaRabbi Yehuda HaRabbanan. Now in terms of the discrepancy between Chaya, so look, we saw in our Mishnah here in Shabbos that there is a difference of opinion between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. And Rabbi Yehuda says that in order for an animal to be considered trapped, it has to be in the house, and the Chachamim allow for a larger enclosure. So we see that there is a range of position regarding animals in terms of when it's considered trapped and when it's not. And so the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa could just simply be a reflection of the positions of Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Fine. El ofas ofas kasha, but the difficulty is going to be regarding birds. Because in one Braisa it says that birds that are already in an enclosure is considered trapped. And the other Braisa says no, even though it is in enclosure, it's not yet considered trapped. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the difference is going to be whether or not the enclosure has got a roof or it does not have a roof. Now, we know a house, by definition, has a roof on top of it. And meanwhile, what do we learn in our Mishnah? That only if the bird is brought into a migdal, a very small, closed, closet-like area, then and only then is it considered trapped. Meaning, but if it's just in your house, it's not considered trapped despite the fact that your house has a roof on top of it. So, the Gemara says, okay. So what we could do in terms of resolving the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa is as follows. We could be talking about where the tzipor is a tzipor drawer. It's a free bird. Now, free bird over here, the Gemara could be talking about a particular species of bird. That certainly seems what the Gemara here is describing. But anyway, there's a certain type of bird that always feels this sense of liberty and never really feels trapped. Lefisha in a mekabel's maros. It actually never accepts authority. Tan de be Rav Yishmael lam nikra shma tzipor drawer. Why is it called a bird, a tzipor drawer? Mishadara bebeis kibesadeh. Because it lives in the house as it does in the field, meaning it always feels free and it never feels trapped. So hashadasu zahachi chayacham inami lo kasha. The Gemara says, okay. So basically, in order to explain the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa, where the Mishnah says that once you put it into a certain area, it is considered trapped, and therefore you can take the bird. The Braisa says that even if I put it into this area, it is not considered trapped, and you can't take the bird. So what we did is we now created a distinction between different types of birds. Some birds feel now trapped, even in a somewhat larger area. With a free bird, even a small area does not feel trapped. The Gemara says, good. At this point in time now, we can go back to the difference between animals and explain the discrepancy in the Braisa between animals. One Braisa says an animal brought into the enclosure is considered trapped. The other Braisa says it is not. So, nami lo kasha habe bevergado habe beberkatan. We could just simply make a distinction whether it's a large enclosure or a small enclosure. Heichidami bevergado, heichidami beberkatan. What does that mean? Meaning in practical terms. What does that mean, a large enclosure, a small enclosure? In idea, in concept, we already understand what that means. A large enclosure is something where if even though I brought the animal into a large enclosure, but it's going to take more work for me to get to the animal. So, taking from such a large enclosure on yantiv would be prohibited because there's still more trapping that I need to do. On the other hand, if it's a small enclosure, so now the animal is fully trapped before yantiv, so going in there and taking that animal on yantiv would be perfectly fine. That's the idea, and that's the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Now the Gemara wants to know, in practical terms, what does that mean? So the Gemara is going to give three different ways to give operational definition of what does it mean to be a small, enclosed area. Number one, Amar Rav Ashi kol hechad derai basrei amati le bechad shichya Bever Katan, Ve'idach Bever Gadol. If when you go into this enclosed area, and in one lunge you're able to get that animal, that's considered a small enclosure. Otherwise, a large enclosure. Inami, a second definition, Kolhechad Anafal Tula Dikhtalam Ahadadi, Bever Katan, Ve'idach Bever Gadol. If the shadow from one wall hits the other wall, that's considered a small enclosure. If the shadow does not hit the other wall, that's considered a large enclosure. Now, even though this is an attempt of the Gemara to quantify the size of the enclosure, there are two variables that the Gemara obviously knows about, but just simply doesn't inform us. One is the height of the walls. The Gemara doesn't tell us. Tosos over here writes that there must have been some sort of standard height of the wall. And the other variable, of course, is what time of day are we talking about in terms of the casting of the shadow. If I had a guess, probably the Gemara over here talks about sometime during midday, because obviously in the morning or in the late evening, the early evening, the shadow that's being cast is going to be a very long shadow. So probably over here we mean the small shadow that one could make. I'm guessing, but that's certainly what the Gemara here could mean. A third possibility, a third way of giving us a definition of what does it mean to be a small enclosure. If it's got corners, and that means to say that the animals now, when you go into the pen, has corners to run into, so that it means that there's still more work for you to do in order to trap the animal, that is considered mechusar tzeder. It's deficient in trapping, and therefore you're going to have to go out of your way in order to trap the animal in that area. Masha ain kain, if it has no corners in which to go to, so then going into that area in order to get the animal does not require any work on your part. The animal is already considered trapped, and that would be then mutter to do on Yantav, assuming, of course, it was put there before Yantav. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Amar v'chule, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Rav Yosef, quoting Rav Yehuda, quoting Shmuel, says the halacha is Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Amar le'abaye, hilkach mechla, halacha mechla depligi. So, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, does that mean that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel of our Mishnah is arguing with the Chachamim? Now, it's not clear. Are you saying they're arguing? Amar le'manafkalach minach. So, Rav Yosef is an answer, says, well, does it really matter? Meaning, look, I'm saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So, the two options are either they're arguing with the Chachamim, and the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, or he's explaining the Chachamim, but then that's fine, the halacha is still going to be like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So what difference does it make? To which Abaye says it makes a big difference. Amalei Gemara Gamer Zimirta Tehei. So he says to Rav Yosef, with almost like a tinge of sarcasm, like, what do you expect? How are you treating the Mishnayos? You're treating them like a song, meaning that all this is just basically something that you sing. It requires understanding. And it's important to realize when Rav Shimon Gamliel is coming to explain the Chachamim or arguing with the Chachamim. And this is not just simply we are saying over the Shitas without a good understanding of what they mean. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara now continues its discussion regarding when an animal is considered trapped versus when it's not considered trapped. Hatzad Tzvi Suma V'yashin Chayav. If the animal is blind or the animal is sleeping and you trap the animal, that is still considered an act of trapping. Because as the Gemara is about to explain, when you get close to the animal, even though it's sleeping, even though it's blind, it's going to make an attempt to run from you, and you're going to have to endeavor to trap the animal. If, however, the animal is either lame or old or sick, so then one would be exempt. Meaning, since the animal is in such a frail state where it's not going to run away from you, so then the act of trapping, it is not considered an act of trapping. Amalei Abaye Rav Yosef, Maishnahani, Maishnahani. Abaye says to Rav Yosef, can you explain to me the difference between the two? So, Hani Avida L'Ribuya, Hani Lo Avida L'Ribuya, exactly as we just got done saying. The difference is that a blind animal or a sleeping animal is going to run away from you. A lame animal, sick animal, old animal is not going to run away from you. Now we have a brisa that says that when the animal is sick and you trap it, you're going to be chayev. So Amar Rav Sheshet Lokasha Habechola Machmas Ishtei Habechola Machmas Uvtsana. Depends on the kind of illness. If it's an illness where it's Ishtei, it's just a fever, so the animal is still going to have enough strength in order to run away from you. If it is Uvtsana, the animal is absolutely exhausted. The animal is not going to run away from you, and therefore trapping it is not going to be an act of trapping. Tanur Rabbanan Atzad Chagav V'Gazim Sarim V'Yitushim B'Shabbos Chayim. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that when you're trapping any one of these types of small animals, locusts, and all different types of small insects, that is an act of trapping. V'Chachamim Omrim Kol Shebimino Nitzod Chayim. V'Chol She'en Bimino Nitzod Pater. And according to the Chachamim, a difference to be made between whether or not this is the kind of animal that's generally trapped or a kind of animal that's not generally trapped. If this is the kind of animal that generally is trapped, you'd be chayiv. If it's not the kind of animal that's generally trapping, it would be considered unusual, and therefore you'd be pater. Tanya Idach, the Gemara quotes another brisa, asad chagavim b'shas hatal. If you trap grasshoppers during the dew, the morning dew. And Rashi explains over here that the dew causes temporary blindness to the grasshoppers, and so therefore they're not going to be in motion, and so therefore trapping them is not going to be an act of trapping because you're not going to get any resistance. And therefore you'd be pater. V'shas sheriv chayv. However, if it's during the hot months, so then you're going to be chayv because despite the fact that it's so hot, but the grasshopper is going to make an effort to run away from you, and so therefore the act of trapping is in fact an act of trapping, one would be chayv. Allah ben Ma'avai omer im hayu mekachos uvaos pater. Rav Elazar ben Ma'avai says that if there's a swarm of grasshoppers, so then you're going to be pater. Now he was describing which part of the brisa. Was he talking about when there was dew? When he was talking about was it when there was a hot sun? The Gemara asked that very question. Ibai lehu Elazar ben Ma'avai areshakai or asefakai. On which part was he going on? Tashma. The Gemara quotes a brisa. Hatzad chagavim v'shasatal. If one were to trap grasshoppers at the dew, pater. But if it's in the summer, he's going to be chayv. And again, it's for the reason we just got done explaining. And here in the Braisa, Elazar ben Ma'avai, Omer Afil B'shas HaSherv, even during the summer, Imhayim Makachos Avaz Pater. If there's a swarm of grasshoppers, so then you would be pater. And the idea over here is that if there's a swarm of grasshoppers, so that means to say that there's really not going to be anywhere for them to move. Picking a grasshopper out of the swarm is going to be a very easy activity, and so therefore that's not going to be the act of trapping. Let's do one more Mishnah and a little bit of Gemara. Svish nechnas l'bayis, if the deer goes into the house, v'na'al echad bifanav, and somebody were to lock the door now, trapping the deer in the house, chayv, one would be chayv. Na'al shnayim, if two people were to lock the door, p'turim, this is a classic example of shnayim she'asu. And we learned earlier in the 10th paragraph of the Masechta that shnayim she'asu is going to be pater. And so the Gemara now is just reiterating the idea in the Malacha of Tzedah, that if two people are locking the door, when only you need one person to do so, the Shnaim She'asua, and therefore going to be Potter. Lo yachol echa leno benalu Shnaim chayavim Rabbi Shimon Potter. Now let's say that the lock, the bolt is so big that there is no way that one person can take the bolt, lift it, and put it on the door. It requires two people in order to lock the door. Under those circumstances, the Chachamim say you're going to be chayav. Meaning once we have a circumstance where I need both people, so then then the two people are going to be chayv when they're involved in the malacha. Interestingly, we saw the sheet of Rabbi Shimon back in the 10th perek. Here it's reiterated again, and Rabbi Shimon says that you're pater. Meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, even when I need both people to do the malacha, the only time a person would be chayv a karban chatzos for violating a malacha is only when he does the malacha by himself. When he does it in tandem with somebody else, according to Rabbi Shimon. Even if the two of them are needed to do the malacha, still, Rabbi Shimon exempts him from a carbon chatzis. We saw the drasha for that back in the 10th parak. The Gemara over here is just one comment to make. I'm Rav Yirmiya bar Abba, I'm Rav Shmuel, Hatzad, Ari b'Shabbos, someone who were to trap a lion on Shabbos, Eino Chayev, you're not going to be Chayev, Ash Yechniseno le Gur Zekishalo, until you put him in a pen that's strong enough to hold the lion. So Rashi over here explains, let's say you have the lion down and you feel like, okay, we're good because we have him held down. The lion's just simply going to get upset at that point in time, and whatever hold you think you have on the lion is going to be able to outperform you, outmuscle you. You're not going to be able to really say that you have him trapped. So only when you put him in the special pen that's designed for the lion, then and only then, is one going to be chayv for trapping the lion. Let's quickly recap our daf today. At the beginning of the daf today, on the bottom of Kuf Hamad Beis, we continue our discussion regarding the value and the necessity of crying over an Adam Kasher, giving a eulogy for a Tamma Chacham, the importance of doing so, the ramifications of not doing so, and that took us to the bottom of Kuf Hamad Beis and a little bit to the top of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara over there talks about what happens when you see clearly that there's din against a family or against a particular community, how everyone needs to worry. Then, on the Kuf Vav Amud Aleph, we went over the idea of Mekalkel B'Malach, if one were to do a destructive act. So our Mishnah taught us that under all circumstances, one would be Pater. Meanwhile, Rabbi Abo comes in with a brisa that says it's true, except for the Malacha of Chovel and Mavir. For the Malachas of Chovel and Mavir, if you do those as a destructive act, you're going to be chayav. Meaning these are the exceptions to the general rule. In that, the Gemara wanted to know, is this an authoritative brisa? Rabbi Yochanan dismissed the brisa altogether, through the Brisa outside. But the Gemara assumes, however, that there is some authoritative nature to this Brisa. The Rabbi Abba quoted, and the Gemara wants to know, is there a way to explain the discrepancy between the Brisa of Rabbi Abba and our Mishnah? And the Gemara says that yes, there is. Meaning, our Mishnah is going like the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is going to be Chayev, and that explains our Mishnah that that Mekalkel B'Chabura is going to be Pater. How exactly is that connected? We spent a lot of time in the first half of our shir today trying to make that connection. And meanwhile, Rabbi Shimon holds a Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa's Pater, so he's going to say that Mekalkel B'Chavala and Mekalkel B'Mavir is going to be Chayev. Again, how do you make that connection? We spent some time with that as well. So that was the point that we made in the Amud Aleph. And finally, we just went over what exactly is the linear measurement of a sit, what is a kafel sit, that we did at the bottom of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. Then on Kuf Vav Amud Beis, we started the Malacha of Tzeida. The Mishnah says that trapping a bird and trapping a deer is, as long as you bring it into a confined area, that is going to be a Malacha of Tzeida. In terms of a bird, there is agreement between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in terms of what is considered trapping. You have to bring it into the Migdal. Bringing it into the house is not good enough. It has to be into a smaller enclosed area. In terms of a deer, we have a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in terms of what is the shear of trapping for a deer. Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be into a house, and the Chachamim said just simply it has to go into an enclosure in the back. The Mishnah brought in the Shita of Shimon Gamliel that says that it has to be a smaller enclosure. A discussion in the Gemara in the Amud Beis regarding a stira that we have between the Mishnah in Beitza and a Braisa over there in Beitza regarding what is considered trapped and what is considered not trapped. And if the animal or the bird is considered already in a trapped state, taking it on Yontav would be fine as long as it was in this trapped state before Yontav. The Mishnah, however, says, I should say better, the Braisa, however, says that one is not allowed to take an animal or a bird from a trapped area on Yontav, because taking it would be considered an act of Seida. So that obviously is a discrepancy. The Gemara spent a good part of the Amud Beis resolving the discrepancy between the two, and the easiest way to resolve it, as the Gemara pointed out, is that we're talking about different types of enclosures, different sizes enclosures. If the enclosure demands that when I go in there, I still need to do more work in order to get the animal or to get the bird, that is considered now an act of Seida. If it's small enough where I don't need to do anything, so that is not considered Seida when I go in there and take the animal on Yontif, and equally on Shabbos as well. But on Shabbos, obviously, we are faced with the other issue of what are you going to do with the animal? Obviously, there's nothing you could do with the animal. The animal's muksa. On Yontif, however, you could check the animal. Okay. Anyway, and then finally, last topic that we covered today is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, is he arguing with the Chachamim? Is he explaining the Chachamim? The Gemara says the halacha follows like him, but that doesn't tell us whether or not he's arguing or agreeing. And the sharp line by Abaye today is, it says that's important to know, because the Gemara is not just simply a song, it's important to understand each line of the Mishnah and how it works with the other positions in the Mishnah. And finally, a couple more details regarding the Malacha of Tzeda, regarding if the animal is blind, sleeping, or sick. Would it be considered an act of Tzeda if I took the animal? The Gemara says that for blind and sleeping, it's still an act of Tzeda, because you're going to get resistance when the animal is ill or old, or does not have the ability to walk, so then it's not an act of Seda, but even there, the Gemara gave us a couple more details. And finally, we did the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Vav Amud Beis regarding Shnaim Shasua. If two people are doing a Malacha of Seda, and I only need one of them, so then that's Shnaim Shasua, and they're going to be Pater. What if I needed both of them? So then, according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, you're going to be Chayv, and according to Rabbi Shimon, you're going to be Pater, as we saw back in the 10th parak.